Good morning. You're on TalkBack.
Good morning, good people of Keene.
Good morning.
Thank you. I've never heard a government official in my life ever say they've done anything but a great job. But unlike you people in the city of Keene, you do a really bang-up job here. I mean, you guys do a real good job. We know what's happening with the state and the federal government. And I read the article, too, about, it was in the Sentinel, about the lowest tax increase in 10 years. I can tell you I'm not the only one that has a problem with that perception, that it's something to be happy about, another increase, of what services that certain people seem to call essential and whatnot. But I also know that really can't be that accurate, because it didn't take into account the county jail. It didn't take into account the new school on Maple Ave. So I wonder, how accurate that is. I just want to know, because my family just got an eviction, type thing from the sheriff. We can't afford to pay our taxes. I used to make more money than all of you combined, and now we can't pay our taxes. Not part of it is because we don't want to, because of the jail. And I just want to know, when it comes down to it, neighbors are going to be looking at neighbors and saying, look, that teacher's doing a lot better than me, and I'm losing my house. I got a teacher across the street from me. She's doing all right. My family's going to be, probably out in the cold here pretty soon, or hopefully not in the summer, in the summertime. But I just want to know, are you people going to stand up, and I think you will, and do something about this? And exactly what are you going to do about this? Are you going to be courageous and, stand up to the state? Are you going to be humane? Are you going to be real? And are you going to be honest? And because we know the federal government is crashing and burning. And I hope to God that you're not going to do what the state does, and when they see the sinking ship, and they are grabbing for everything they can grab while the ship sinks. I hope that you people will have the courage. I think you have. I believe in you. I hope you are better than what we see with the teachers' unions and what we see. And, of course, I'm a baby eater because I say that, right? We understand what the real deal is. It's not about, they say it's for the kids. Well, it's not. It's for the teachers' retirement accounts. It's for their wallets. We know that. And the same thing with the five people who now privately own the jail, that you and I, all of us, paid for unwillingly, because I can pretty much speak for everybody except for the people who work at the jail, that we don't want that in Keene, and it's unnecessary, and it does need to be shut down.
Who are the I'm a little confused.
I speak with, Cynthia, everyone.
Who are the five people who own the jail?
Well, I know that the warden, Van Winkler, and the some commissioners, so the county commissioners, they privately own that piece of property. People cannot go there they had some of the people that they had pressed charges against for trespassing were going down there. I don't remember the whole incident, but it was clear that the courts weren't on the side of people. So I my question to you folks is, what are you going to do about it, if anything? And if it's not anything, I'm certainly not going to be upset with you, but I can guarantee you my neighbor is. And I can guarantee you most of my neighbors are very upset. And I know that I want to have courage. I want peace. I don't want hatred. I don't want violence. I want to know whose side you're going to be on.
First off, Cynthia, there are two things that the caller said that I want to comment on. First off, he has talked about the fact that his earnings are dramatically reduced from what they used to be. Well, and he's comparing that to the teachers. I must say the 38 teachers that got pink slips that are getting laid off are probably not feeling real good either. and are probably also suffering a great deal from the impacts of the recession and the impacts of the
losing their job.
Potentially losing their jobs. Secondly, one comment that the caller did make that I would agree with, that when you look at the tax rate is set by the city's impact, which is about 2%, but also by the school district's impact and the county's impact. And the county impact, I think, was about 6%. I'm not sure right offhand with the school district, but I think that was also somewhere around 2%. So the caller is right. It's not just what the city has done. It's also what the school district and the county have done that are going to impact on that tax rate and ultimately the taxes they have to pay. So we do have to keep that in mind, that the impact is not just what we do. You know, we congratulate ourselves quite correctly for the work that we've done to keep our portion of the tax rate down, but also when people get their tax bill, they're going to have an impact from the school district and from the county.
And we have no control over the
none whatsoever.
The school or the county. We have no control over that. So I guess the answer to the caller's question is we're not going to do anything about the other two because we can't. There's just no way that we can do that. Good morning, you're on TalkBack.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You brought up a good point, Cynthia, about Social Security.
Yes.
That's one thing that I've been bringing up for years. After the average Social Security recipient has collected for, you know, anywhere from 3 to 4 years, they've already collected far more than they ever put in, that their employer matched, and also with a decent rate of return. So, you know, my question is, it's not really a question, I already know the answer. How long is that a system like that going to last? The country is bankrupt. I think people got to realize and face the facts of life that this country is in serious, serious trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You get, you know, wow, on the news now, oh, wow, gas came down a penny. I've been hearing for 30 years that we're going to become energy independent, but yet nothing's ever happened. Nothing's ever been done about it.
Well, I think that's one of the difficulties of being a democracy, in that everybody has a say. Wouldn't it be nice sometimes if just one person could stand up and say, damn it, you're going to do it my way, and I say we're going to become energy efficient, and we will, because he said so. But that it's not the way it works, unfortunately.
Well, we're running an incredible deficit. I don't even, like you said, you know, you brought another profound statement when you said, you know, the city will go out and spend 12, 15 grand. And, you know, I remember one thing when they were talking, that the whole show was tied up talking about the bathrooms that cost the city $16,000. But when you're talking millions of dollars worth of expenses, nobody bothers to call. I don't think the people in this country realize how big, I don't think in layman's terms they realize what a trillion and a half, $1,500,000,000 deficit really is. And now we're approaching a $14 trillion deficit.
Don't tell them what comes after a trillion.
Yeah, because this is what's going to happen. This is not going to, what are you going to do, just keep printing paper? Like I've said, you'll get your Social Security checks, but it's not going to have any buying power.
Right.
And here's the thing that, you know, there's been a lot of this talk going on about, you know, the state retirement. Well, 34 states have a deficit in their guaranteed retirement funds. I want to know who's going to pay for that. I already know the answer.
Right.
They're sending it down to the property tax people.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a way to solve a problem. You're going to end up creating class warfare. They're going to look at these, like that guy called in and is losing his home, because there's always that straw that broke the camel's back. I guess my question is the state mismanaged the fund, or whoever they hired did, right? They got a guarantee, but yet they expect people that own property to pay for a retirement fund. The question is they're going to, what are they going to do? Is it going to go to the point where they're just going to, you know, I understand the state's retirement here fund is $5 to $6 billion underfunded right now?
About that, yes.
Chris, what in the world are the people going to do? Is that the easy thing to do? I mean, I know you come from the wrong side of the state. You know, people here in Cheshire County, you know, we're not really part of the state, you know. So I'm being a little facetious, but it seems like good ideas come from this part, but they don't want to listen to you.
Well, I'll give you your first question is the Social Security and Medicare. If you go to the Keene Sentinel today, the new report, in 2036, the Social Security surplus is gone. And by law, the only amount of money that you can get in Social Security check is whatever comes in that year. So basically, 2036, you'll have to get a reduction.
But don't you, I mean, I'm screaming this and nobody's listening, but everybody knows it. All they have to do to make it right is start collecting Social Security on every dollar you make.
That's right. And the other part, when he was talking...
Why should only poor people pay on 100% of their income?
The other part, when you talk, we're talking about the $14 trillion deficit, debt load, vice the $1.6 trillion deficit this year. And to put it to really, I'd say, Forrest Gump's terms, every single American would have to give up $5,000 to $6,000 of government services this year just to balance this year's budget and not take a single penny off the debt. And so when people got to realize, we'd say we don't want to spend, but we're greedy and we're asking. We're all getting almost $6,000 more each year than what we're paying for. And the other part, when you go for the state retirement, is because you can blame it on the unions, and the unions are going to get most of the blame, but the greater majority of the blame goes to the politicians. We knew, I'll say we because I'm there, but it was before my time, we knew the numbers weren't right. So we went and said, hey, you know what? We're going to get a 12% return every year. The cities and towns loved it because it meant their portion went down to almost nothing. And so the local taxpayers liked it because they didn't have to pay into the retirement fund. So if they would, if it would have been reasonable, we could have paid into the retirement fund that real cheap dollars years ago instead of going 10, 15 right. years without paying, and now we have to make this big bump up.
Right.
I got another point I'd like to bring to you, Cynthia. When Nate and you, Chris, too, when you talk about this, there is no, technically, there is no Social Security Trust Fund. All it is a bunch of IOUs from the U.S. government.
Right, because they borrowed from the trust fund, which they weren't supposed to do.
Right, but there is, physically, there is no actual money there. It's just a bunch of IOUs. So the U.S. government is broke. So therefore, Social Security is broke. You know, they can just keep printing money, which they're doing. They're running these printing presses 24/7 just to keep pumping money into the economy. But you can already see the inflation. You can see gas. You can see food. You can see everything. Mm-hmm. It's inflation. So you'll get your check, but it won't have any buying power. And that's exactly what's happening. And that's why you've got 34 states in the union that just the state retirement funds alone, just for state employees, it's in the trillion. I think it's 2 to 3 trillion underfunded with the 34 states.
Well, I think part of the problem is that people are, as we've talked about this earlier, that people are living longer. They never envisioned when they put Social Security out there that people would live to be, you know, over 70, perhaps. I saw a thing in the paper yesterday where a couple had been married 70 years. I mean, when my grandmother was married 50 years, my grandmother and grandfather were married 50 years, and everybody that came through said, this is a miracle that you've lived 50, you know, you've been married for 50 years, and now it's nothing if you've been married 50 years. You have to be married 65 to make it mean anything.
Cynthia,
I've been married 57.
Congratulations. But in 1960, the Supreme Court ruled, right? They knew, and it was Fleming versus Nectar. The Supreme Court ruled that there is no legal right to Social Security designed for another era. That was over 50 years ago,
right,
that they ruled this, that there's not enough people working. And back then, 50 years ago, the federal government stated in their briefs that the says that Social Security system is unsustainable at present levels. That was 50 years ago. And they calculate the future needs to cover Social Security, they have to raise the taxes up, Social Security taxes up 50 to 80%, which nothing has been done in 50 years, and now it's all come crashing down.
And, you know, will anything be done in the next 50 years? Lord, I hope so, but I don't know.
It's too late. I mean, I don't like to be, you know, be such a pessimist, but you just have to look at the numbers. The numbers are not there. Numbers are not there.
Again, you have to get 7%, if that's what we're paying for Social Security, 7%. You have to get 7% from every dollar earned. I don't care if it's your first dollar or your millionth dollar. You have to get 7%.
And they did a study on that, Cynthia, and that would make a 3% debt in the deficit of Social Security. It would make a 3% deficit. I mean, it would cut the liability down by 3%, which is essentially, you know, insignificant. It just would not. It's a good idea, but it still would not raise the amount. It would only raise 3% of the money that's needed, because one thing was never factored in, and I think it's great that people are living longer, but when Social Security was designed, you would work till 62, and the average life was 65. Well, now it's up in 80, 85, which is super, but it was never put into the equation.
Right.
But one of the things that you have to look at, part of the big fault is ourselves. We don't want to elect leaders, because a good leader is like a good parent. They'll tell you what you need to do and the reason why. You'll hate them until you're 25 years later and you say, wow, mom and dad, it's pretty smart.
Right.
We elect political leaders, and political leaders make all these deals to get elected. And once they get elected, they got to pay off all the mockers, and they pay it to us. Plain and simple, let's look at the prescription drug. Prescription drug helped out, so we go in and say everyone will get $1,500. Then you have the donut hole. We didn't have money to pay for it, but we go and do it. We get the votes. And then we turn around as politicians and say, look at how we're basically screwing the people because they got the donut hole. Mm-hmm. So let's come up and cover the donut hole. In neither cases did we have money for that. But we gave the people what they wanted. They gave the people what they demanded.
Give them what they want to hear. And therefore, now it's going to be time to pay the piper.
Well,
it's happening. Unfortunately, that's what's happening out there. You know, when anybody comes up with a good idea, you hear these ideas, but you get squashed. You're right. There's too many special interests, too many people looking after themselves, and they don't look after the greater good. So therefore, they will be essentially the ones that ends up suffering the most.
Good morning. You're on TalkBack.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I got a couple of interesting topics that you've touched on this morning. The first one, of course, is Social Security.
Oh.
I wish that gentleman that had called in earlier when you were first talking about the dog park would call in once again, because obviously the man has some concerns, but his concerns are really nothing new. It's just that once again government has failed to address a problem that's been going on for years. Now, all you have to do, you don't need to be a mathematician to look at your statement that you get. Once a year, I believe if you're over 50, you get a statement or so on and so forth. Add the numbers up. You'll see how much has been put into the system by yourself and your employer matching.
Mm-hmm.
Put in a decent rate of return, and you will see that the system is designed to fail simply because there is no money. When you look at the numbers, once the average Social Security recipient has been collected for 3 or 4 years, which I've said before, you will see that you've already taken out more than you ever put in.
Oh, I think that's true.
It is true, and it is a system that is designed to fail. Now, and it was been known for 50 years that it was the Supreme Court ruled, like I said last week, that it's not, government has no legal right. Our people have no legal right to Social Security. It was ruled by the Supreme Court. It is just a benefit that it's political suicide to tell somebody you're not going to get your Social Security check. You will get your check. It's just not going to have any buying power, and that's exactly what's going on right now. Now, as far as bringing in a person from the Social Security, I can already tell you what he's going to say.
What?
He's going to sugarcoat it because he works for the government. They already had someone from the Social Security Department on the Cheshire TV. I watched the whole thing. All he did was totally sugarcoat everything. They don't talk about the real numbers, and that is the way that, that's why we have such a gigantic deficit.
Right. Well, part of that and that the government has borrowed from it.
Well, exactly. There is no trust fund. It is only paper, only IOUs from the U.S. government. So, therefore, the U.S. government is broke. The credit rating in the world, other countries that are looking at this and saying, gee, this is they're beginning to wonder whether they should even put money into this country, whether they should even buy the treasury bonds.
If they'll... You know, they're probably afraid that the government will borrow the money that they put in, too, and then what'll they do?
Exactly. Yeah, this is the situation. Now, another situation you guys have touched on this morning is about the city employees foregoing their raise.
Right.
I think that's a pretty sad situation. That tells me this economy is in really a very, very sad state of affairs.
I see. Wait, first I thought, what does he mean by that?
Right. I mean, I certainly applaud the employees for doing that, but it's pretty unfortunate that they had to.
Well, I think that's the thing, is that, again, they're trying to lead by example and make people understand that, yes, you're paying your taxes, but, you know, it's going toward things that services rather than toward other people. And I think that's one of the things that they're trying to say.
But when you look at, and I'm just going to give a guess, and I know I'm pretty close. What does it actually save the city? $200,000 or $300,000?
500,000.
500.
And we've saved another 900,000 by not replacing 14 people over the last year that have left.
Right. Okay, now, how much is the state reneged on the money they promised they were going to pay the town?
Right.
$1 million last year, and who knows this year?
Who knows this year?
So who knows this year? So now it's already out in the news that with the price of gas the way it is, a lot of people are definitely going to cut back on their traveling. And as I understand it, now the state is already, they balance the budget on the backs of the property taxpayer. That's how they balance their budget, by downshifting. But now I understand that they're still 60 to 70 million short because their revenue projections aren't coming in. Now, when you look at, there's another thing, incompetence in government. Now, I don't see it on the city level, which I've said many times before, but as soon as you get away from the city, you get into the county, you get the state, you get the federal government, there's no accountability.
And I don't know whether whether the city and county people, we will be setting an example for the city and county employees the school and county employees that they should forego raises. I don't know. I mean, that's up to them. We don't have any say over what they do.
Right. But and these are the external. Yeah, you couldn't have answered it any better, Cynthia. You don't have any say. We don't have any say. And another major, major problem that is on the horizon that is going to start getting more and more news is the state retirement fund.
Right.
$5 to $6 billion underfunded for what they promised. Now, who is they? What I want to know is who promised a guaranteed retirement? Who?
Had to go through the state legislature.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Signed
now,
by
now,
the governor.
What? Right. And what is the... Okay, so they guaranteed that. So their answer to it is, when it falls, to push it back down to the cities and towns to pay for it.
Right.
That's right.
And that's what'll happen.
Through your property taxes, because we don't have any other kind of...
And our only income is, for the most part, is property taxes. It means that property taxes will go up to fill this hole that the state has dug.
So, therefore, that gentleman that called in last week, he's now looking at, losing his home, and how many other people are out there. When you keep getting this downshifting, it's just going to... Eventually, it's going to be the straw that broke the camel's back,
right.
And it's already breaking people's backs. I mean, the real estate values are certainly not going up; they're going down.
Right.
So therefore, they push this down, and they because they guaranteed it. Now, What is the state legislature composed of? I mean, I know it's composed of individuals.
Individuals that are elected by the populace.
But by the populace.
And
so therefore, wow. So it's a pretty scary situation. So what they're essentially looking to me like they're doing, which I think is really unfortunate, is people stand there, lose their homes to pay for someone else's guaranteed retirement. That's a very, very unhealthy situation.
Well, I believe it was in 79, and forgive me if I don't get this right, but I believe it was in 79 that the state said to municipal employees, you must belong to the state retirement system, and in return, we will pay so much of that for you. But now they've stopped paying that, and people used to have the right to get into a different retirement system if they wanted to, and the state and the city, for example, if they were in a different retirement system, would pay as much as they paid for people who were in the state retirement system. But now the state, you know, I guess it was 79 that the state came and said, no, we want all the money.
And that's another one of those unfunded mandates,
right,
now.
Right.
So we have to deal with it.
Well, we kept funding them, but now they can't fund us back. That's the problem.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think, you know, what's happening already in the last couple of years, you know, we've cut back our budgets so drastically that, you know, they will begin to start affecting services. You know, and I know that people feel that maybe we spend too much money, but don't plow their sidewalks someday.
Right.
Well, where is this home rule? So we know what
We don't have home rule. That's a farce.
Okay, but that's a ploy that they use. Oh, let's let the cities and towns, let's let them run their own schools and do this. But yet, they have their nose in it. So there is no home rule. There is no local control,
right.
I should say.
That's a political ploy. It's a made-up word that they use to convince voters that people who feel that way ought to be reelected.
So my question is, if these people are elected officials, then why, and they're supposed to represent their communities, why do they act the way they do? The numbers don't add up. The numbers don't add up. If you're an elected official and you're supposed to be, are you protecting your community? Are you protecting your own retirement? Are you really protecting yourself? I think that's the question that we have to look at right now. Because if the legislature is composed of people, who is the legislature primarily composed of? Obviously, I think my feeling is obviously it's a lot of people that have quite a bit of money coming in, because no one can afford to go up there for $100 a year unless you have an appreciable amount of money behind you.
Right. Well, they used to say years and years ago, I'm talking 30 years ago, that it was retired people and housewives.
That's right. The average age was something like 72.
But I don't think they, you know, they even do that anymore, because most housewives now are working.
Yeah, well, look, we have a couple problems here. You know, I noticed the caller kept referring to they. I mean, as though, you know, there are 425 of those people up there, and in great part, you know, it's hard to identify them as a single entity, because there's 425 different opinions,
right,
and they change jobs every 4 or 5 years. You know, there's new people there, so the influx. It's really hard to get get continuity. So things do change. One legislature's promise turns into another's downshifted mandate.
Right, right. And I think that this time, for some reason, all the stars aligned and we got people in that I don't believe have the residents of New Hampshire's best interests at heart.
That was very kind.
Yeah, well, I just don't think they have our best interests at heart. And I think that more and more people, for instance, are having to go to the state hospital for the mentally insane because they don't get any help in their community.
I'd like to comment on the caller's first issue, you know, about Social Security. I disagree that, you know, when he says that it was designed to fail. We have to remember, in 1932, it was designed to protect old people who are literally dying on the side of the streets because they didn't have anybody to take care of them. I mean, it was designed as a social net.
And people didn't live much beyond 60, right. 65, 68.
Right, and what it's turned into, you know, especially after World War II with the baby boomers and such like that, it's turned into a different animal. It's turned into a trough where Congress, it's their own private bank account
right.
sometimes. And unfortunately, they need to review it. I don't think it ought to go away. I think the reality is Social Security is here to stay. It's in every developed country in the world. It's a good backup plan. It's a good humane system that can be funded and it can maintain itself if you keep other people's hands out of it.
357-1290 is our number, and if you want to talk, this is your chance to call in. You've got about 20 minutes. 357-1290. Good morning. You're on TalkBack.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Always lovely to hear informed people. A gentleman called a little while back and said Social Security was designed to fail. Now, I've talked with that man many times, and I very much enjoy him. He's got a lot of passion and zeal. But sometimes he's talking purely on opinion. As irrational as our government seems to be on occasion, it is run by 535 people, 435 in the House, 100 in the Senate, and we elect them. So if we don't like them, we should elect others.
Why don't we do that?
Yeah.
I don't understand why we don't do that.
That's right. It's a good question. And it's not somebody out there. It's not some pile of human beings that have just come in off the street and have conspiracy theories going on. We elect them, and we should be able to take the results of what they did because we participated in their doing it by electing them. It's as simple as that. When he says that the Social Security Act was designed to fail, he could not be more wrong. I used to teach history, and I made it a practice to go to one important book whenever there was any question about any historical issue, question of the facts as opposed to opinion. So I immediately, when I listened to him, went to my very important book, Encyclopedia of American History, Richard B. Morris, a very well-known historian with adequate credentials up to the PhD at Columbia University. And I looked at I looked up Social Security Act. It has four separate parts to it, but one part gets right to the point. We don't have time for the four parts, but one part gets to the point. It says very clearly, substantially clearly, quote, a tax for old age and survivor's insurance to be levied in equal amounts upon all employers and employees, with specified exemptions for the very poor, commencing at 1% in 1937 and gradually increasing to 3% in 1949. This part of the act was exclusively federal in scope and character. Out of the national fund created by these taxes, note that, the national fund created by these taxes, the federal government was to pay to retired individuals 65 years of age and over a retirement pension, which began on January the 1st, 1942, ranging from a minimum of $10 to a maximum of $85 per month, depending upon the number of working years during which the employee contributed. So there's two forces at work here, the federal government and the personal employee. That was not designed to fail. That makes a great deal of sense.
Right.
And it made a great deal of sense at a time. We don't like to think about it, but read any of the works of Steinbeck and you'll get
some ideas. Daily Dose with America's Doctor.
It was designed to help people who are starving to death. Many people starved to death during the Great Depression in this country, as much as we don't like to talk about it. So it had to be brought up to date, my second point, and that was when Reagan and Tip O'Neill got together to update it and make more sense of the fact that people were living beyond 65, and this was during the 1980s. And the third thing I would like to point out, you may remember, in the famous Bush versus Gore contest, in which actually Gore won the popular vote by 55,000 votes, but the Supreme Court decided against that. The activist Supreme Court, we might say, decided that Bush had won. And but you, if you remember that particular election of 2000, they both frequently talked about, quote, putting a lock on the box. What did they mean by putting a lock on the box? They meant, quite simply, that they were going to lock the fund that was going for Social Security, because money was being taken out of that fund for all kinds of things. Today, it is being taken out at the rate of $1 billion a week for the war in Afghanistan. So the fund itself is absolutely solvent and is not taking from other government sources or more taxes than the 1980s revision of the law. And it is solvent until the year 2037. On C-SPAN, I heard a wonderful address by Franklin Roosevelt's grandson talking about the complete solvency of the Social Security plan until 2037. So it has responded very well to what it was designed to do. It was not, in fact, designed to fail. There were rational people involved. This was before the age when lobbyists wrote the laws, not only contributed a certain amount of money to our lawmakers to get them there, but and just said, then don't worry about it, we'll write the laws for you. So I do not understand this idea of it was designed to fail. That's an opinion, but that's not a fact. It is one of the few solvent boards in the United States government at the present. Now, if it should fail because everybody is taking out of the box, the great saying in the 2000 race, then that's another matter indeed. That's a matter which goes ultimately to the faith, quote, the famous clause, the faith and credit of the United States government. If the faith and credit of the United States government is finally abjured, for example, if they don't raise it very soon, then we all fail. Then we have a government that is living way beyond its means, and we all fail. But until the fact that we all fail, that is to say our government is insolvent, like that of Greece or Portugal, then we do owe what we owe to the seniors. And when this guy gets to be a senior, unless he's very well off, he'll really enjoy what was a perfectly rational a decision made in 1935, I believe, and also it was contested. The tax features of the act were upheld by the Supreme Court in Stewart Machine Company versus Davis and Helvering et al. Versus Davis in the year 1937.
Well, thank you,
caller.
That's
very interesting. Thank you.
It's always very interesting to get to the facts of the matter as opposed to opinions on the matter.
That's true.
And I thank you very much for your indulgence in listening to me give my little screed.
Well, thanks very much for calling.
Thanks.
Bye-bye now.
That was a very comprehensive explanation.
357-1290. Good morning, you're on Talkback.
Well, Cynthia, I've never double-dipped when I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it today with your permission. I have to refute what my dear friend just said. In a landmark 1960 decision, Fleming versus Nectar, the Supreme Court ruled that there is no legal right to Social Security. It was designed for another era. There is not enough workers to support the system. The federal government says that the Social Security system is unsustainable at present levels. I'm getting my is not an opinion. It's a fact that the Supreme Court ruled in 1960 that for another era. So I will stand by what I'm saying. And back then they said that there's right now there's over 10,000 people a day being added to Social Security retirement. The baby boomers is what is breaking the system. The trust fund money is a figment of Congress's imagination. I've always said you'll get your check, but it's not going to have any buying power, and that's exactly what's happening now. In order, back in 1960, they said in order to ever sustain the system, calculate future needs, they would have to raise the Social Security tax from 55 to 80% up to sustain Medicare and Medicaid benefits. The entitlements will eventually be cut. I rest my case on the Supreme Court's decision, and that's what exactly is what happening now. So I'm not stating an opinion. I'm telling the truth.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Bye-bye now.
Well, I'm glad we don't have to deal with issues like that on the city council.
Oh, my heavens. Can you imagine?
I only have to worry about salting the roads and getting the sidewalks plowed and such like that.
And when they talk about it can't be sustained, for how long can't it be sustained? I mean,
it's a million-dollar question.
I mean, that's the thing, you know. Yeah. If they're looking at it, can it be sustained, as he said, until 2037, and then there's a problem? I think
the argument goes beyond that. It's a philosophical one, and I think we have two callers here who are on diametrically opposed sides. One obviously believes that there is a need for a Social Security, and one obviously believes that there is not a need. And each side, defends their positions.
Right.
And I guess, unfortunately, all of the rest of us are stuck in the middle until they decide. Somebody decides one way or the other whether or not it's a system we're going to keep and make it right or not.
Well, a couple of things that happened this week that I thought people might find interesting. Maybe you already know about them because it's general knowledge. But there is a new president of the Chamber of Commerce.
Yes, there is.
Laura Keith King. And she comes to us from... She's with the Peterborough Chamber right now, so she'll probably step right in and very smooth.
I just saw Tom Dowling at Hannaford yesterday.
And good luck to Tom.
Yeah, and he looked very relaxed.
Yes, yes. And Tom has done a wonderful, wonderful job. He stepped in, I guess, temporarily, and he stayed, 11 years or something like that? And the other thing that I wanted to mention was that First Course ended at their final graduation.
Gosh, that's a shame.
Talk about state. That stupidity.
that is really something. That was a program that actually hit the ground running.
Yes,
and it put real skills into real people's hands that otherwise wouldn't have had a chance.
Right.
And I just think that's a heck of a shame. And somebody's got to do something about getting something like that back, and not just in cooking, in other areas
right.
as well.
But the state. The state looked and they said, "Oh well, we don't want to." The state legislature. 357-1290. Good morning. You're on Talkback.
Hey guys. Good morning. It's Ian from FreeKeen.com. How are you?
Good morning.
Hey, since we're talking about facts regarding Social Security, let's go through one of the more, important ones, but one that's probably not so obvious. I'm going to ask a couple questions and see if we can lead you where we need to go. One, who dies sooner, rich people or poor people?
Doesn't matter to me. people are people.
I'd probably on the whole, poorer people would die because they may be not as well nourished or as
well. They can't afford the medical care. Like richer people. Okay, so who dies sooner, men or women?
Men.
And who dies sooner, black people or white people?
According to statistics, I think it's black people.
Yeah.
Okay, so by the conclusions we've just drawn, that means that Social Security actually benefits rich white women over everyone else in the entire country. That's not very fair, is it?
If I was rich, I'd be in that group, and I'd probably think it was very fair. But I'm not.
Sure. So you've essentially got a large group of poor black males that are working their entire lives to pay into this system. Many of them may not even make it to collect much of the Social Security. And as Mike called earlier, you may get a check from them, but it may not be worth anything.
Right.
If they cut you a check for $1,000 and today, and then 5 years later, inflation has taken $1,000 and made it worth much less, you'll still get $1,000 and you'll be lucky, if hyperinflation hits, you'd be lucky if that buys a bag of cat food.
Right.
Well, I don't think that those people who die earlier expect to die earlier. They probably hope to someday collect it, and even if they don't,
wives to collect it.
It benefits their families. Say if they were to have children who are underage, and if the breadwinner leaves the family, that's exactly what the system was designed for.
Hold on a second. You're telling me that if somebody dies at age 65, their son or daughter gets a check? I'm pretty sure that doesn't happen.
In some cases, I believe,
Depending on if the child is dependent on them still.
Right.
So the way it typically works is, as I understand it, the you pay into that system, you die, they stop payment at that point. Whereas if you actually got to take the 15% of every single paycheck that is being put into a Social Security fund, which, as was pointed out, is being raided constantly, if you were to actually keep that money and invest it yourself, then you'd actually have a huge nest egg with which you could then send on to charity or send on to your son or daughter or your grandkids or whoever you wanted to, instead of having the criminals in Washington, D.C.
I suspect if someone 65 has a disabled child, they probably are collecting Social Security on their own, the child.
Yeah,
maybe
right.
So.
But it would be available to the wife,
to the spouse,
and
any dependents.
Yeah, I'd just rather be able to keep the money that I earn and invest it in the ways that I think is best, with organizations that will actually keep the money in investments rather than spending it on killing people around the world. And you know what? If you work for yourself, you don't have to pay Social Security. So I actually haven't paid it since 2002.
Well. I hope you never need it. But you know what the problem with people paying, like having if they could choose to either have Social Security or they could choose to have their own retirement, I know so many people, young people who don't make much money, who would say, well, I'm not going to pay the Social Security right now, and I can't afford to put money aside for my own retirement, but eventually I will be able to, because everybody thinks they'll be able to do it someday. They may not. And what happens when they turn 65? They have nothing.
Unfortunately, we have a system where it's survival of the fittest. And I, for one, am not for one moment going to allow that kind of society to exist.
Right.
Well, the fear that you may have over some people making poor choices doesn't justify forcing people against their will to do something that they don't want to do. I mean, that's essentially you saying that you know what's best and that you're willing to, force somebody to pay into a system that you think is great, but they may not. And that's not what freedom's all about.
Well, you've said it yourself. You haven't paid it, and you don't have to. So
that's right. But unfortunately, people that work for corporate employers can't get their corporate employer to say no. So a lot of people who would prefer to take that 15% and maybe help their grandparents out or something like that. Maybe their grandparents, a lot of folks are getting money from the system, but they've got, medications and things like that. But, Social Security just isn't even coming close to actually helping them. So a lot of these young people might want to help their parents or their grandparents, but they can't because they're hobbled by that 15% tax. Anyway, guys, thanks for listening.
Okay, thank you.
I think the caller overestimates how many people are against Social Security.
Really. And I think it's actually a 7%. I think the individual pays 7%, and don't you pay 7%?
Something like that.
Yeah, and then the employer pays another 7%, so the total amount is 14%, but I think, and it's only out of a certain amount of your pay, which is always...
The debate goes on.
Yeah, that just irritates me. I think everybody, if everybody has to pay Social Security, then they ought to have to pay it on every dollar they make. And I just think that that's really important to do that.